Microplastics are turning up in South Dakota's natural bodies of water. What impact is that having on our health? You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A team of scientists from Dakota State University in Madison is surveying and identifying microplastics in South Dakota's rivers, lakes, and streams. Now, microplastics are those fragments of plastic that measure less than 5 millimeters in size. Some are smaller than a fraction of a human hair. Scientists do not have definitive answers on how microplastics accumulate in the human body or what the health impacts might be. In South Dakota, this is the first study to look comprehensively at microplastics in waterways. I went to the field and to the lab with the DSU team. Children, vibrant in neon pink and purple swimsuits, dig in the sand on the beach at Wall Lake. It's late morning, summer. Their mother has brought toys and snacks, even a bright kayak down the hill from the car.
28.
It's warm.
Today. Further down the beach, a different kind of excavation is underway. A research team from Dakota State University gathers sediment and water samples. They're here with two primary questions. First, how common are microplastics? Those teeny tiny plastic particles that infiltrate our lungs, our brains, our bloodstreams. How common are they in South Dakota's rivers, lakes, and streams? Second, what types of microplastics are present here? It's a project led by professors Andrew Satoff and Christelle Baker of DSU's College of Arts and Sciences. And this morning, there are four undergraduate students on the beach with Professor Baker.
We have to follow those exact protocols to make sure it's constant across all sites so that it can't be some error in our sampling that caused us to detect or more likely not to detect a microplastic. Even things like wearing cotton clothing, because little fibers from your clothing can get into our samples from contamination. So yeah, it's very important.
The student scientists are meticulous about their samples. Buckets and shovels are aluminum, their clothes 100% cotton, their sampling jars glass. Derek Moreno is a DSU student scientist. He's originally from Las Vegas, Nevada. He's identifying here what's known as the lake's rack line. That's a spot where high tide on the flat, calm shore of Wall Lake has left behind a faint demarcation, a low sandy ridge of sorts, between water and land. This is where the lake leaves evidence.
Got his five scoops. She's going to now filter with sight water. But we try to keep a consistent amount of like sample every time we go collect. So it's for us, it's going to be five scoops. And then Caleb's going to filter there with our sight water. Tom, come on, Hamza, shake like you really mean it. So at the top we have our larger things. We're going to discard those. And then yep, Hamza's going to dump out the rest of the water. Now we're going to collect our sample inside of the jar.
The team will sample around 50 sites this summer. One of the biggest challenges is just getting to the right locations. They need public access or permission from private landowners. It's not all sandy beaches. Right.
Sometimes the sampling sites are not ideal, like this one. Like this, these rocks are too big, there's no sediment we can gather here.
You're right, you can go first.
We'll go this is going to a different area.
The one that died today.
Be careful.
With samples from Wall Lake and Lake Vermilion, the team packs jars labeled with blue tape and black Sharpie into the car. Cool, clear lake water sloshes against the airtight lids. Other jars are packed with black and sometimes brown sediment. The researchers drive the gravel roads and bean fields to the lab at Dakota State in Madison. That is where they will find out what else is in those jars.
I think initially, the question or the issue that we were trying to address is the fact that there was a total lack of information.
That's Jay Gilbertson. He leads the East Dakota Water Development District. His organization funded the Dakota State Microplastics Survey.
We'll look at studies from neighboring states or across the country, and that most samples would come back containing some level of microplastics was not a huge surprise. A similar sort of study done over in state of Minnesota, 41 different sampling sites I think they looked at. They found microplastics at 40 of the 41, and the 41st site they couldn't use. So effectively 100% of the sites they sampled. And there's no reason to expect it would be any different here in South Dakota. That said, thinking it's going to be the case and knowing it's the case is often very important, particularly if you're trying to make decisions.
Gilbertson says the baseline survey will give South Dakotans more than a snapshot of microplastic presence. It's also vital to know what types of plastics are found. Most of the evidence that microplastics might have toxic effects comes from lab studies involving animals or cells. Scientists have not definitively proven the health impacts of microplastic accumulation in the human body. But according to a recent NPR report, research is suggesting fertility problems, neurological diseases, harms to the metabolism and the immune system, and changes that signal increased risk of cancer, among other effects. The Dakota State study is looking at lakes, rivers, and streams within the geography of the East Dakota Water Development District. There are 7 water development districts in the state.
A couple of years ago, we did something similar with the forever chemicals, the PFAS compounds. Once we got our program started, I think that generated some interest. And the interest had been there at the state level, but that might have encouraged them to do a little more work. And so the state has also done some PFAS sampling across the whole of the state. Not much more is being done there, but we have at least a snapshot of what things were like in the summer of 2025 in that case. This would provide, a baseline story of microplastics in water bodies in eastern South Dakota in 2026. And if somebody, in the plastics industry, not that they would necessarily, says, well, no, that's not a problem here, we'd say, well, no, in fact, we know it is.
So these are all of our samples.
The lab at Dakota State University hums with technology. Against the wall, a shaking incubator rattles constantly with the sounds of mechanical agitation.
So basically the biggest takeaway is we're keeping our samples in a cool, dry place. We don't want to have them outdoors.
Glass funnels stand ready to separate microplastic particles from sediment samples. An ultra-cold storage freezer suspends animation until a sample is ready for processing.
Really cold until we process.
And in the corner,
the hood is basically like the heart of a lab, because most work gets done in it. Most work, like if it's a good lab, most work gets done in the hood.
The laminar flow hood. Think of it like a workbench you slide your hands into. Filtered air flows within, keeping everything that might mess up your sample out of your sample. Professor Andrew Satoff runs the lab.
Yeah, the challenge with microplastic studies are microplastics are ubiquitous. So we have to worry about contamination. So we have to make sure that we are dealing with all glass supplies. Most biological supplies in the lab are plastics-based, so we can't use any of the traditional things. And we need to make sure that we aren't contaminating our samples with the plastics that are in the air.
Hamza El-Sayed, in his cotton lab coat, is at the hood, scooping frozen sediment crumbs from an aluminum foil pan into a glass beaker. This is the digestion process. It gets rid of all that organic matter that thrives in South Dakota lakes and rivers.
Now when we begin our digestions, we like to nest our samples in ice, again in glassware, and we use a glass stirring rod and a glass thermometer, to monitor temperature.
These students have spent hundreds of research hours here in the lab, processing samples, logging the data. They are fastidious about fundamentals. If a scientific drama is playing out in our waterways in the lab, the passion is for protocols. Here's Derek Moreno.
Something that's, I think, important to note is controls. This control in particular is a control of distilled water vacuum filtered and went going through the exact same process that our, all of our samples go through. So we vacuum filter distilled water, and we scan our filter.
Nationwide, surveys of microplastics have been inconsistent. A recent University of Michigan study made headlines after demonstrating how using the wrong gloves in the lab could mislead researchers into overestimating microplastic concentration. Remember the potential human health effects of micro and nanoplastics? Well, some of those findings have been challenged because of things like poor contamination controls. Caleb Shaw says this survey is different.
Excited and proud of to do here at DSU is we're kind of bridging a gap in the literature of microplastics. A lot of the previous papers and studies that have come out have kind of overestimated the number of microplastics that they find in the environment because they would use microscopy and by eye analyze the samples they find. So what we did here at DSU, this he was kind of pointing to this instrument here, and we're using this to chemically analyze the microplastics we put on there so that we know for sure what we find is microplastics. This way we could definitively tell at a chemical level what we find, and we can identify it and analyze it.
FPIR, let's go.
Yeah, it's time to see what's in a sample. Moreno cleans the crystal of the FTIR. It's an unassuming tabletop machine that rests on a cart next to the hood. It's about the size of a printer, but far more sophisticated.
And these are special lens wipes, free of any microplastics.
Moreno subtracts the control spectrum from a microplastic sample spectrum. He sends the data to Shaw for analysis. Shaw matches what they found by navigating a microplastic identification library. Colorful wave-like patterns, spectra, appear on his laptop screen. Anything over 70% is considered a match.
So it's like a database. It's a database full of spectra. It's full of plot points for spectrographs to be able to identify our sample. And here you can kind of see the top library matches we hit. So this is like 77%. So it found a 77% match. This red line is what the database shows, and the white line is our sample, that it matches that red line 77% to this polyester ethers.
In fact, pause at any shoreline in the state, scoop up a handful of South Dakota sand or mud or lake water. You might also be holding micro and nanoplastics in your hands.
Polyester. So, yeah, fiber, yep.
A lot of clothing materials, polyester. And then
there's also polystyrene in here, which is
like coolers.
What we don't know yet is just how much what's in that handful matters to the natural world and to your health.
Which is like, can be plastic bottling, like polyacrylonitriles.
Here's Professor Satoff again.
Based on your hypothetical situation of grabbing some sediment from Lake Herman, yes, you would definitely have some microplastics in your hand. We are finding a variety of microplastics. We're going to try to do a top 10 microplastics from each site that we're looking at, and that's going to be in our report. I wouldn't panic when I see these results. Yes, they are concerning. Yes, they should be studied further. But you're right. It is a part of modern life. We rely on plastics, so it kind of makes sense that plastics are in our environment. The fish would eat the microplastics. They would accumulate the plastics. As with ecology research, smaller things eat the plastics. Bigger things eat the smaller things, and the plastics get to a higher level.
Caleb Shaw spent his morning balancing on rocks, splashing through lakes, scooping sand, and plunging jars under the waterline, collecting moments in time. He grew up in South Dakota. Now he's preparing to graduate from Dakota State and pursue advanced education in medicine.
You know, I'm a big nature person. I'm super big advocate for, environmental health. And it's kind of a double-sided sword because we do all this research and we find microplastics and we're super excited that, you know, our protocol is working. But at the same time, that means we're finding microplastics in our waters in South Dakota. So definitely bittersweet, but we definitely needed work too, because we're kind of the first people in South Dakota to do
the
this.
The research team at Dakota State University will continue microplastics survey work throughout the summer. The team plans to present their findings in scientific publications, but also in pamphlets designed for the general public. In Madison, I'm SDPB's Lori Walsh. That's our report for today. I hope that it served you. You can find photos of the Dakota State University team on this story online, sdpb.org/inthemoment. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.